For me, if you want to create a great candidate experience, you need to create a learning opportunity for both sides. That means for the business, for the people who interview, and for the candidate.
My name is Katharina, and I'm the Community and Event Manager at eCulture, a company that is on a mission to shape the world of unbiased hiring. Welcome to the Oops, I'm Biased podcast.
Before I'm going to introduce the exact topic, Matthias, I would love for you to quickly introduce yourself.
Yeah, more than happy to do that. My name is Matthias Schmeisser. I'm a senior director, a global TA and employer branding at Amnify. Amnify is located in Berlin, Germany, also where I am located. It's a deep tech IoT B2B startup. We have roughly about 180 employees around the world, having headquarters in Berlin and Würzburg, but also are operating in the US and Latin America. So quite a global company. How do you know me? What do I do else? I am a co-founder of the TA Crunch Berlin community that does regular events. I'm quite active on podcasts and talks as well. And one of my key areas of expertise is now skill-based hiring, but also, you know, everything around talent analytics and employer branding and structured hiring. These are the topics that I enjoy most, and I'm happy to be here.
Thanks, Matthias. And skill-based hiring. It's quite a buzzword. Everyone is talking about it. There are many different definitions of understandings of what people think it is. So we are definitely going to also touch upon that today. Quick introduction of the topic, because I always like it to, as I said, make sure that we have the same understanding of what we are going to talk about. And I'm a big fan of using statistics for that. So very short introduction. I think if we look at the key labor market trends, also, by the way, for last year, but what we will definitely see further develop in 2024 is obviously digital transformation that is going to have more and more impact on the way we work. A lot of jobs are digitizing, a lot of jobs are changing, which means there is a changing demand for skills as well. Obviously, there is a huge talent shortage, only going to grow. I'm going to show you a couple of statistics later on to show that. And last but not least, fortunately, there's finally more a need for D&I. It's also something that candidates are demanding more from organizations. So whether you want to do something about it or not, as an organization, you simply have to nowadays. So what do we see between 2020 and 2025? This is, by the way, sorry, I made a typo in my presentation. The World Economic Forum expects 85 million jobs to disappear and almost 100 million new jobs to rise. So as you can imagine, there's going to be a lot of jobs in a couple of years' time that we don't even know about today. And to make that even more surprising, what they also concluded in their same research is that almost 70% of all the children entering primary school today will actually end up working in a job that doesn't exist today. So I think that really emphasized the urgency to not purely focus on, hey, what did you do before, but what are your talents to also succeed in a new kind of job? What we see when it comes to D&I, the need for D&I, 73% of all workers would be less likely to apply for a job if the company they are applying for doesn't prioritize D&I. Many organizations did research into that. I've used the Society for Human Resource Management. There are loads of similar researches out there. And then last but not least, when it comes to the talent shortage, by 2050, there will be over 120 million fewer people in the labor market only in Europe. So there's a huge decrease in the workforce, while the number of jobs is actually going to increase by 12%. So we have fewer people to fill our vacancies with, while the number of vacancies is going to rise significantly. Now, what would we expect then when it comes to talent acquisition? What kind of transition would we expect to see? What I at least would expect is that there would be a focus on someone's skills over their previous experiences when you are evaluating someone's suitability for the job, while prioritizing the candidate experience that is engaging and inclusive to make sure that candidates don't drop off somewhere in the process. The painful reality, though, is completely the opposite. According to LinkedIn, they did this research in 2023. Still, 81% of all companies is using a CV to screen candidates. So it's definitely focused on experience over skills still. And 42% of all candidates actually had a very negative experience throughout the hiring process. So we actually see the complete opposite. Matthias, we spoke, was it, I think, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, when we were preparing for this webinar. And we asked you, obviously, what are two topics that trigger you, which was, many different topics, but two of them were skill-based hiring and candidate experience. What triggers you when it comes to these two topics? What made these two topics for you the interesting ones to spend a little bit more time on?
Oh, yeah. Thank you for that question. It was interesting because Gabe yesterday, training on skill-based hiring, have some people follow me on LinkedIn. And the topic here is, when I look at the hiring experience or the recruiting experience, right? Let's talk about resumes for once, yeah, or CVs. I feel like it is the most biased document in the process. Until now, still, we use it in order to make selection decisions, right? And those selection decisions are highly biased. Why? Because people have their names there, they have their photos there. Some people even say, you know, family status, single, married, whatever. Lots of different things. We see the way they are designed. We look at years of work experience. We are kind of have the similarity bias in terms of, oh, they work for Netflix or Google, they must be good, right? So there's a lot in there that already allows us, if you're not handled with care, to be very biased from the get-go of who you want to interview. Yeah, and that is really, really the first step. And when you look, then combine this with candidate experience, the worst candidate experience, based on some research that you can go for with tools who are also measuring candidate experience over the course of time, is the very beginning. The very beginning of the journey is when somebody applies, they either get a rejection, but no feedback at all. And they also say, look, but I am actually qualified. Yeah. So why am I not being interviewed? So, and here I think comes this whole topic of skill-based hiring, where I would say, why are we not removing resumes and instead doing a skill-based top funnel assessment? That means, look, whatever assessment that is, that depends a little bit of what kind of role you look for, of course. But what I did, for example, I said, look, I have a test there, 20 minutes. I don't want your resume. I just test you on your recruitment skills and your recop skills. It's actually very relevant. So I use job knowledge tests. Yeah, in academia, they refer to this. They have a 40% prediction of future job performance, while job experience has only 0.7%. So it's the weakest predictor of future job performance. And here you can make a difference by putting a cutoff score there and say, look, I actually select and make an educated and a data-driven decision on actually deciding of who to interview by looking at skills instead of pedigrees, as they say it. And I think this is something where if we assume that we get the resumes completely out of talent acquisition and recruitment, we would do the world a big favor, yeah? And we get a huge step into a less biased environment and procedure.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think it would be my dream that we let go of that. I do think that we need some time, but it's promising to see that at least more and more companies are maybe not fully letting go of the resume, but at least try to let go of some elements of it. So it's at least a good starting point. Hey, maybe to let's cut it into two pieces. So we have the candidate experience part, how to make sure that candidates are actually applying for a job and not dropping off somewhere in the process. And there's obviously the topic of skill-based hiring. If we would start with candidate experience, You already explained it a little bit, of course. I think if I understood you correctly, you think that the most damage with regards to candidate experience happens at the start of the funnel. What are most organizations doing wrong, in your opinion?
Yeah, it's the mindset they apply to hiring. And let me explain this. For me, if you want to create a great candidate experience, you need to create a learning opportunity for both sides. That means for the business, for the people who interview, and for the candidate. If we just imagine that every candidate that interviews with a company gets stronger because they create a learning opportunity for them and they gain something out of that, then this would be something that, you know, a lot of people would enjoy much more. Now, why did I say in the beginning of the funnel is the biggest problem from a candidate experience perspective? Is because there you don't get any feedback. You just get an automated rejection email. You say, look, based on this and this, you're not a fit. And then that's the first problem. And the second problem is, why are we not having the decency, if we spend time with people and interview them, to at least call them and give them feedback, a structured feedback on why they did not move forward? Yeah. And so that leads us then to the combination of skills. Why? Because most of the companies are afraid to give feedback. And why is this such a big topic? Because they don't have structured feedback. They don't have qualitative feedback based on their performance. Why don't they have this? Because they don't know what good looks like. They don't know, have an understanding of what a high performer in the organization looks like. And that's why they cannot give accurate feedback on, hey, this is what we look for. Here are the skills that we have assessed, or these are your shortcomings, and this is how we approach it. And that's why you didn't move forward. If people would have this internally, such a structure, such an assessment approach, then they would probably be more willing. And if you have biased feedback on candidates, of course, I don't want to share it, right? Because I don't want to share it because, oh, she didn't smile a lot, or he did not answer all of the questions. Well, that is not good feedback, right? And I think this is where it starts getting a little bit more problematic. And this is why people or companies have a hard time to really share open feedback.
Yeah. Hey, so if I try to summarize what you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you basically said, because of the fact that oftentimes, organizations might not be fully aware of what is it actually that I'm looking for, what are the skills that either make someone successful or not, they also more subjectively therefore either reject or advance a candidate, which leads to a situation in which they can't say, hey, these are the five things that we are looking for. You match 3 out of 5 or whatever. So therefore we don't see enough fit for you to continue. Was that the right summary?
Yeah, somehow. And also having a structured approach, like to, for example, say, look, we ask you these questions about, let's say, relationship building. And then people are not answering the questions in a STAR method, for example. Yeah, they are too fluffy. They are not really in detail, right? And so the way you communicate, the way you answer this is also something that might, you know, come across that, yes, you might know everything. You have the experience. But at that time, you did not perform on that level, right? So what I'm trying to say here is, yes, it's not knowing of what good looks like, not knowing what they look for, and not having a structure in place that actually is consistent with what they look for.
No. Hey, it makes me think of something that we do in our product. So to quickly get your opinion about that. So what we do is a candidate completes the games as part of their initial job application. Mm-hmm. The employer receives the report, including the results of the candidate, but also to what extent do the results match the competency profile? To what extent is there a fit between the competencies of the candidate and the competencies that we are looking for? What we do for the candidate is that we immediately also send them their report with all their results. We also include a talent development guide to further develop yourself. But what we never do is share that competency profile. So the candidate knows their scores, but they don't know what were the scores that the organization was looking for. Would you then recommend to include that so that you have that perspective on because we try to make it a valuable experience. But if you don't know in what context you should read your outcome, then...
Yeah, no, 100%. I agree. It's an interesting conversation that happened yesterday as well in my workshop. Is the question is always like, look, not every role, even if they have the same job title sometimes, is the same role in every organization, right?
Yep.
And some roles are more valued in certain organizations than others, right? So for example, I give you an example. I was looking at RecOps knowledge. That means how can recruiters leverage technologies in order to be more efficient? And in some companies, not so many recruiters are owning this. Yeah, it's even a known profession. There are even own job titles for this particular role. And then somebody came back to me after doing that test, the skill-based top funnel test, and said, look, Matthias, I don't think those questions were relevant, yeah, for the role that I applied. And it's like, yeah, that's your experience in the past. For me, this is a very key skill in the organization I need, because we have a lot of technology that we work with and to become more efficient. So yes, it depends, right? But that is something what I always say, you can do this by messaging. Yeah, be clear upfront of what you assess candidates for. Be on eye level. So many times, candidates don't know what to expect in an interview. Yeah, they don't know what will be talked about, right? And so small things like, look, we are talking about this is the role, that's the topics, and that's the expectation for the role in this seniority. Yeah. That's something I need. And then I can prepare properly. Yeah. Some organizations even share questions up front. I'm not there yet, but I think, yeah, that's the right direction, right? Because in the end of the day, you want somebody who is at their best level and at their best performance. And they can only be at their best performance if there's an equal power level, because everybody knows the same thing. And if you hide things from people, how can they be the best versions of themselves if they don't know what they are talking about? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Hey, we have been talking about skill-based hiring and how to assess candidates based on skills and give the proper feedback to candidates. I think that's at least my main takeaway from the candidate experience part. Skill-based hiring, I mentioned it, of course, in the beginning, is a buzzword. It's something that every organization is talking about. A lot of people have different understandings of what it is and how you actually implement that. Could you share your definition of skill-based hiring?
Yeah, well, don't take credit here. But I also looked at some academia research, and everybody has a different one. Literally, what we are looking for is measurable and objective employability or occupational skills of candidates in order to perform a job, yeah, compared to their experience. Yeah. So we really look at the skills to do a job. Yeah. So that could be very much different from job to job, but it needs to be measurable and needs to be observable as well. Observable is the right word, right? Because in the end of the day, I think these days we know this pretty well. A lot of employees have a lot of skills that they don't use for their jobs as well. So they're hidden skills as well, right? And I think that's something that is a completely different topic. But again, I think this is for me, skill-based hiring is. And the hiring, and not just the skills, but hiring means then also that we test for those skills, right? So you don't have just conversations. We are really testing those skills to get data to see how good are they in order of what we are looking for. That is definitely also something that I don't want to mention yet.
Yeah. And before we continue to how to then do that, could you give some examples of skills? Are we, is it in your understanding, is it hard skills, is it soft skills, is it a combination of both? I think that the term hard skill, soft skill, competency, it's all being used. And I think there's also a lot of confusion around those topics. So let's say you are hiring a marketer or an engineer or whatever. Like, what are some examples of skills that you could mention?
Yeah, 100%. So We started to take the DNA of our culture into skills, and then I call them DNA skills. But literally what we were doing is we call them our core skills, but power skills is also our essential skills or social skills. You know, people frame this these days completely different. But what it is, for example, for us is it's a set of skills that apply for everybody, for everyone in the organization. That means effective communication. That means relationship building. Yeah, that means adaptability. A little bit different to resilience, but yeah, that's something that we have seen there as well. And there are a couple of more, but I think that is the social skill aspect. Yeah. And then when you go into different jobs, then you have these functional skills, and that these are skills that are most of the time set up by the business, right? So that could be, for example, coding skills in a different language, right? You name that language. It could be system design, system architecture, right? A different approach. For example, for talent acquisition, it's pretty easy. You have like talent attraction, yeah? Candidate assessment, talent operation, talent acquisition as say. What we always do with businesses is to say, focus on 4 to 5 essential skills in the business, right? Sometimes when you let leaders build those skill taxonomies, they start up coming with like 15, 20, and it's way too much, right? You want to make it as simple as possible to say, what are the core skills that this person can do the job in their first day?
Yeah. Hey, and being an advocate of the devil then, because there's obviously a combination then between what I would call the transferable skills, I think more and more important in the digital transformation. So for people who aren't familiar with that term, transferable skills are basically the soft skills that Matthias mentioned as an example. So adaptability, learning ability, how do you deal with feedback, those kinds of things. Basically the skills that allow you to be up and running in a new job as well fast. So it's not necessarily dependent on a specific role, but it depends your success in a larger variety of roles. And then there's what you call the functional skills, so the coding test, or maybe for marketer that you work in an advertising platform before. What should be, in your opinion, then the balance between these two? Because you could argue, of course, that the functional skills, yeah, how relevant are these skills in the long run? If the job market is changing that rapidly and jobs are constantly changing, how much value should we then actually add to the functional skills in that process?
Yeah, good point. It, of course, depends always what kind of role you look for on a seniority level, right? But let's go in the different direction. I think, especially in tech hiring, we have over-indexed on functional skills a lot of times. Yeah, we wanted to have the best engineer, et cetera, et cetera. But what you can see when you look at career progression and career paths, that actually the social skills are the most powerful skills to move forward. Yeah. So what we have seen with engineers, for example, when they are senior engineers and they need to decide which road do I take now? Do I become a people leader or do I be an expert track? Yeah. These two different tracks. Then there is really the topic of, well, if I'm just saying I'm not a people leader, yeah, but I'm an expert, then it's still about how do I share knowledge? How do I communicate to people? How do I enable teams? Yeah. And these are skills. These are based on that social skill. So I would argue the more advanced you are in your social skill set, the easier it is after a certain time in your career to actually move to the next level. And therefore, it's sometimes underestimated because we just look for social skills at 20 or 30% maximum for engineers. And that's way too low, right? Because in the end of the day, if you want to make a career in your profession, you need to master those social skills. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, clear. Hey, and then you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, extremely important, obviously, how you actually then measure those skills and that you also make enable yourself to basically objectively compare the outcomes of candidates, let's say, compare the data that comes out of that. What is for you an assessment, or like what are different assessments that you because I think that I'm obviously biased, but when I think of the word assessment, I immediately think of a psychometric test, but that's also because my company does that. But there's of course situational judgment tests, there's indeed the coding test, there's structured interviews, but what are the types of assessments that that you really like and why?
Yeah. So I'm a huge, so let me start with academia, right? I think there are, because why are we doing assessments? I think sometimes we keep on losing the big picture of why we are doing certain things. Yeah. So we start recruiting because we want to predict future job performance, right? We want to make sure that the person that we hire is great in what they do. Now, how do I find that out? One thing is very obvious, one which most of the people use these days is structured interviews. Yeah. So I'm asking multiple different people the same question. And based on the expectation level that I have and the interview questions I have, I can compare them. Another, and I think this is sometimes not so much leveraged, but you see this in engineering a bit more, is work sample tests. That means I actually have tasks that they do on their day-to-day basis that is important to succeed in this role. So you kind of, instead of just having conversations, you actually let people work in real time. Pair programming is a very good one, but maybe also, you know, you build scenarios, 15 minutes, kind of, okay, how do you go about it? And you learn things about how do they solve problems? Do they jump to the conclusion or the true solution very fast, or are they asking clarifying questions? So topics like that, I think, where you can get a lot of color on. And then another one is that I really like is, of course, this job knowledge test that I use, Top Funnel, right? Just to understand, look, when I don't look at your resume, but I want to understand through multiple choice questions on a certain topic, your knowledge, test your knowledge of how advanced is this, and then you have cutoff scores and you can look at that. So these are things that predict quite good job performance. And what I feel like the combination of all of those elements in the hiring process, it increases the prediction of job performance. And I think that's something that I think works well. Why? Because in the end of the day, it's again a messaging topic, but if you tell people, we want to test your skills to give you a fair pay and actually position you in the organization based on your expertise, because then we're not just hiring them. They need to grow in this organization as well, right? And if they feel like they're unfairly paid or unfairly treated or actually know more than others, this is where friction starts. This is where disengagement starts. This is where, you know, people get unhappy.
Yeah, no, definitely. Hey, I'm always a bit confused if we do this in 30 or 45 minutes, so I try to stay in between the 30 and 45. Something that you told me a couple of weeks ago when we last spoke, which I think is a great also use case to wrap up this webinar, unless there are questions still coming into the chat, but is that you did this experiment, right, where you said we are going to hire, I think you hired someone for your own team purely by focusing on skills and removing the resume entirely from the process. Now, what I would be curious about, well, you told me, obviously, but I think for everyone to hear is how did candidates react on that? Because I think that one of the objections that we usually hear from when we speak with leads, for example, is that they fear that if you introduce an assessment top funnel instead of uploading a CV, that candidates think, oof, I'm not going to do that, I drop off. So how did candidates respond? What were the results that you saw by shifting the focus from CV to skills? And finally, what is one thing that you would do differently if you would do it again?
Yeah, that's good.
Sorry, that's a very big question.
No, it's good. I'm so happy that I did my my training yesterday because I answered all of those questions. First of all, the first question was, what was the first question again? Sorry.
The first question was the reaction of candidates.
Yeah, reaction of candidates. So what we did is we framed them a little bit and said, look, we did a messaging. I did a LinkedIn post on this about the role and explained in 60 seconds what this role is all about, who we are, the process, et cetera, right? And then I said, look, the only thing I need to know is it's a Berlin role, so you need to be in Berlin or not. That's the only thing I need to know, or if you're willing to go to Berlin. But anything else, everybody else gets a test. So I send them the test, and I put in there to say, look, we don't look for your years of working experience, your company you've worked for, et cetera. I explained them the assessment approach. and also said that, look, we want you to actually get some feedback as well. So even if you don't pass the test, you get the results and some learning opportunities as well. So we really framed that nicely. And the result was that 91.5% did the test. Yeah. And so we had a drop off or bounce rate of 8.5. When I talked about this top funnel before they even interviewed anyone, by the way, right? It's just a message sent out and then they took the test. A lot of people told me in my profession, no, the bounce rate is crazy, Matthias. You will have a drop off of 40 or 50%. Not happening. Now, to be fair, the moment when I posted that role in November, a lot of people lost their jobs in recruitment. A lot of recruitment people were unhappy. So I had a high inbound role. I did not have like just 5 or 10 people. I had very much like almost 200 people within a very short period of time. So that meant also there's a lot of pressure on how do you make that decision, right? So, and then what you also said, oh, did it work? So what I looked at is, I looked at the results. I did a cutoff score from 75 to 100, yeah? And one lesson I learned, I should have done it from 85 to 100, not 75. I was a little bit too friendly, let's say, to use a friendly, yeah? But 85 to 100. But what was super interesting is the person that we hired in the end scored 96%. That meant that it was not only the highest score, but that also showcased all of the interviews afterwards actually confirmed the robust result from the test to say, look, top funnel, I have a test that actually already tells me based on that score how good somebody is in the end. Yeah. And that's brilliant. Yeah. Because that actually proves the point that you see in academia to say, look, you can predict future job performance by those results. What is also very interesting is if I would have put the result or the cutoff score from 90 to 100, I would have lost one final candidate. Yeah, so that's also very interesting because the second final candidate that I had an 87% of a score. Yeah, so you need to be mindful here and how tough are we with the cutoff scores and how not. Yeah. I think I sent the test to over 114 candidates. I think I managed to have 10 candidates in the 90 to 100. I had another, 25 in the 85 to 90. And then I had another 20 in the 75 to 80 and another 40 candidates that didn't pass the test. Yeah. So roughly these were the numbers. If you want to have them later, I can also look them up again because that was just from the top of my head. But just to give you a rough estimate of how the bounce rate and how the results were. So I eliminated with the skill-based assessment 40 people out of 114. So that's like, yeah, roughly 35 to 40% of the funnel just because they didn't pass the test. But they created a learning experience. They got proper feedback. They saw the result and they felt they were unbiasedly assessed. And that is super.
Yeah. I think that's the most important thing. It's also something that we see in our platform that's, funnily enough, it's, to be completely fair, not something that we expected when we built Equalture. We did expect a slightly more drop-off when candidates were being asked to complete a game as part of their application. But we candidates have the opportunity to leave feedback on our platform so they can rate it, but also comment on it. And we see a lot as well in the comments. Like, it's not necessarily that candidates drop off because of time or whatever. It's usually because they either don't understand why they're doing it, or because they have the feeling, hey, this is probably not going to be an objective evaluation process anyway, so let's just drop off. And doing it the way you described at least makes it very objective and easy to compare between candidates. Because we spoke about obviously the desire to shift from CVs to skills, how that ties into or links to candidate experience and how to inform candidates properly. This is quite a big shift, of course, for organizations to go through. Like, this is already, I think, for a startup or a scale-up a transition, but especially for the larger organizations, this feels like a revolution to them probably. So if you would have an advice for one or two things you can already start doing tomorrow in order to adjust to the market trends without maybe drastically disrupting your current processes, what would it be then? And I know that's always a very tricky question to ask.
It's not that tricky as you think. I think what I most of the time say to people is, look, if you want to stand out in recruitment, it sounds very obvious, but is to master your basics. Make sure that everything that needs to happen is in place. And let me start and get very specific here is kickoff meeting, intake meeting. That means, am I asking the right questions when I are actually, you know, have my first conversation with a hiring manager? Am I asking, how does your team look like? What kind of personalities do you have in your team? What is your skill gap analysis? Why? What are the goals for this person? Do I have 30, 60, 90-day goals? How they contribute to the overall company goal? Are you having performance issues when you're, you know, having certain features to deliver on your product roadmap? Yeah, it's conversations like that that will up game or up level your understanding of what kind of person do I need to hire into a team, into an organization, that they have specific goal settings and challenges that they confront with. So many times we are just looking at the role, we are hiring, we use the job description that we have used 3 years ago, we don't even update them, and then you'd be like, oh, I wonder why this is not flying. Well, because maybe the team has something, a little bit of a more let's say they are very introverted and they have a problem to connect with stakeholders in the organization. So maybe a little bit more extrovert that enjoys talking to people and connecting with people might be the perfect fit for that team to help them to actually make the next step and be much more integrated than being siloed in an organization. Something that you cannot find in the job description. That's why really master your kickoff intake meeting with hiring managers, asking the right questions. And from there, then also ask the question like, how do you know if the candidate is good or not? The hiring manager, ask them. How do you know that their candidate is actually good? What needs to happen to tell you? What are your signals? What are your indicators? And these are things I think you should do. You should ask. Most of the time, I remember when I was a recruiter, I had a hiring manager meeting and I just interviewed the hiring manager. What is your leadership style? How would you describe your leadership style? Most of the leaders don't have an answer to this. Oh, that's a good question. How would I? So it's topics like that that gives you also a little bit of an idea. If, for example, you have a micromanager, could always happen. Are there people that maybe drive in such a micromanagement environment because they're very deadline oriented, they're very structured? For them, it's not a pain point. For others, it's probably they creep and freak out, right? So understanding about certain topics like that will help. I think that's something that I would advise people to do as a first step.
Yeah, very good one. I think to maybe add to that, that I wrote in my book, I'm writing a book on how you can start implementing competency-based hiring, is to also ask the hiring manager, because the funny thing is that hiring managers often have a very clear idea on, hey, someone who's successful on my team or is not successful, what are the things that make them either successful or not? So that's always something that I would always recommend to ask him, like, hey, look at the top performer and the slightly low performer in your team. What are the things that make them either stand out or having difficulties? And then oftentimes you have a crystal clear idea on, hey, they are maybe not flexible enough, or their collaboration skills are not enough, or they can't keep up with the pace of the organization. It gives you a very good starting point to at least reveal a couple of those things to be aware of indeed.
Yeah, 100%.
I really enjoyed the conversation, Matthias, and I learned a lot. So thanks so much for that. I hope you enjoyed it as well. For everyone who was listening today, thanks so much for joining. And if you do have any follow-up questions for Matthias, Matthias and I are linked now for a month on LinkedIn. He's a superstar and influencer, so probably he's more than open to having you on LinkedIn and continue the conversation. And Matthias, big thanks again for joining today.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a good one. Bye-bye. Take care, everyone.